eat Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Andrew Robinson, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. Now, this is a significant point to this. Welcome, Andrew, to the show. This is the first time you've ever been on Fat Guys proper. You've been on the second reel a couple times.
Yeah, I think I have.
But I always say greetings, couch potatoes across the country, meaning the U.S., because that's where I live. And that's all that's important is me. around the world and on the internet, we actually have... This is, I think, the first international guest host we have.
Hurrah.
Woohoo! And that's because Andrew is from Jamaica.
Good stuff,
where it's warm and toasty, and I am from Ohio, where it is bitter, bitter cold.
But I am actually sitting in an AC room so that I can block out lots of background noise
for you. for all the crazy stuff that's happening outside your, you know, macaws and monkeys flying around, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Let's keep the stereotypes going in Ohio. Let's keep it going.
Do you have flying monkeys in Jamaica? I don't think you do.
No.
Okay. Andrew, tell us a little bit about yourself. This is the first time on the show, on the big show. You know, who are you? What do you do? Where can we find you on the internet? All that good stuff.
I'm Andrew. I write at this little known website, gmaninterviews.com. I'm on Twitter at gmaninterviews. I'm just the guy who writes about movies, who happens to have done it a little bit too long and happened to have talked to a little bit too many people who probably did the same. And so, that's what it is so far. I mean, I've written columns for my local newspaper, and hopefully to this point I'll progress even further. Who knows? Maybe Fat Guys at the Movies will be picking me up one day.
Well, you also do your own. You have the Unnamed Movie Podcast as well. You do your own podcast.
Yeah, and you can find that on Gman Reviews as well as iTunes.
Awesome. And speaking of where you can find things, you can go to fatguysatthemovies.com. And, oops, I think I may have hit mute. Hold on. Oh, I hit mute. I'm sorry. We had a minor technical glitch. I'm going to blame on the international broadcast here. But it's really my belly hit the mute button, which is a constant danger in the magical studio in the sky. Anyway, if you want to get a hold of us, welcome back, Andrew. If you want to get a hold of us, you can find us at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes, search Fat Guys. And if you search on Facebook, if you say fat on Facebook, it will actually take you to the Fat Guys at the Movies page. You don't even have to do Fat Guys. Just fat comes right to us.
Nice to know you own that. You own that search result.
I don't know what it is. I just you know, it's that and like diet sites. Who knows? You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's an American number. just so you know, since we are international on this episode, and we do have a voicemail, we will be playing that in the third segment. So, Andrew, you ready to start kicking?
I'm ready. I'm ready.
All right. The first, I do apologize. Andrew kind of came in on the last minute. We needed a last minute guest host. So he wasn't prepared for the movies, to see, but you don't get to screen them early, do you?
No, I am no form of press, and there is no warrant for press in my country.
And they also, this is, I find interesting. You told me this once, and I thought I'd share it with the audience. They do intermissions in every single movie.
Every single film.
You know, even like something like when Cedar Rapids, which is, I think, like 83 minutes long, when that comes to Jamaica, they're still going to do an intermission.
Yes.
That's just so you can buy stuff, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And go to the bathroom, I guess.
You can't hold it for 83 minutes?
Holy cow. I don't know, man. People get up and go and do stuff. I usually sit down and just wait. I'm like, please, can I have my movie now?
That blew my mind. I think of all the things I've ever been told that happened with movies, that blew my mind the most. I'm like, even for like a 70-minute movie, like if you go see Nightmare Before Christmas, yeah, and you're like, yeah, that just blows my mind. Anywho, speaking of short movies, let's talk about Justin Bieber, Never Say Never, in 3D. In this movie, teen heartthrob Justin Bieber remakes the classic James Bond film Thunderball.
My name is Justin. This is how I dress.
I've been a fan of him from when he posted his first video, and I'll be his fan till he posts his last video.
I think to myself, I was once chilling in my room, just in a regular place, and now I'm in this big world. It's just crazy how it all came around.
There's gonna be times where people tell you that you can't live your dreams. This is what I tell them. Never say never!
The funny thing about it is that the other... it was last night. I went and I saw No Strings Attached, and they were playing the trailer for Justin Bieber in front of me, guy in front of me, because it was like a special screen event, because my local theater is starting to have these special screen events, and no one at the event knew what movie we were watching, but they were playing these trailers before.
Wait, you mean you went to a movie and they're like, hey, No Strings Attached, and you're like, oh.
Hey, I didn't have to pay, and I got a free movie without intermission, so, you know, it's a special event. And the Justin Bieber trailer came on, and everyone in the theater just said, as long as it's not this movie, I will be happy.
They're like, oh good, it's a trailer, because that means it's definitely not this one. I have nothing against Justin Bieber. I know a lot of people hate him. I don't have nothing against him. I just have no interest in him. It's not even like the Jonas Brothers and Hannah Montana when I had kids and they were kind of interested because they watched the Disney Channel and stuff. There's just no interest. So I'm just kind of like, I would imagine it's going to be like the Joe Bro concert. And that's about it.
Hey, as soon as I see this title, I just think of a Mos Def song in which he says, never say never, but you just said never twice. And I'm just like, that's what Justin Bieber just did. He just said never twice.
Wow. Andrew just called out Justin Bieber.
Children
take
need
that
to go
punk
to school.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. They're saying it's kind of critic proof simply because it's drawing in the audience. Like I said, I have a feeling it's going to be wildly similar to the Jonas Brothers concert movie. I don't know. Some people have compared it to This Is It. I haven't seen it. They didn't screen it. And normally I get really upset when a studio just doesn't screen something, because I'm like, why not? Who are you, Kevin Smith? Let me see this movie. And I was thankful they didn't screen it, because I'm just like, I don't want to see it. Because I actually went and saw the Jonas Brothers concert movie to review it, and it was just filled with teenage girls screaming. And I'm like, you guys do realize they're not really there. Why are you screaming and waving? I don't know. So
hey, last year I went and saw that Michael Jackson rubbish.
I did not like that movie.
Neither did I. That wasn't the movie.
You know who'd have hated that movie? Ooh. Michael Jackson. Because it showed everything in its raw form. He was a perfectionist.
Yeah, and that's why I thought it was a waste. It's like these guys going, well, we can't make money from a concert, so we'll just show you cut footage that we were doing for a 20-minute DVD extra.
Yeah. I think it was just crass. So, yeah, Justin Bieber's Never Say Never gets a preemptive suck. Obviously, that's what it's going to be. The next movie, we're just going to play the trailer and then go right to break, and we come back and talk about it. It's The Eagle, which Channing Tatum stars as a Roman soldier who travels into northern Britain with his slave to retrieve a stolen golden eagle.
Our new commander, Marcus Aquila.
Ready? On my command!
Well, you knew who his father was.
The man who lost the Eagle of the Ninth.
Not to mention 5,000 men.
The boy's a bad omen.
They say the eagle's been seen in the far north.
No Roman can survive north of the wall.
One man can hide when army can't.
It's too risky.
Then I'll take Eska.
He's a slave. He does what he does because he has to.
I heard everything you stand for.
He will slit your throat the minute you're alone.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We just heard the trailer leading into the break for The Eagle. Andrew, are you at all, do you like sort of sword and sandal fighting Roman kind of movies?
I guess I've seen a few. Some of the more classic ones I'm missing out on that I should check out. But for the one thing that comes to mind, which is something I really love, is the HBO series Rome.
Okay. I've never seen Rome.
But unfortunately, this film stars Channing Tatum, which means I can expect nothing like Room.
There is a certain sort of handicap that a film has if it stars Channing Tatum. I'm not exactly sure why he has a career. He's one of those movies. You know, I compared him to Ryan Seacrest on Twitter once because I'm like, he's one of these people that has this huge career, but can anyone point to a movie and say, yes, that was successful because of him? You know?
No, he just looks big and looks like he can hit people.
He's a good looking dude. I give him that. But, you know, it's like Dear John last year did very well. I don't think it had anything to do with Channing Tatum. Same thing with, he was in the first Step Up. Who cares if he was in it? You know, any movie, any Step Up movie works with the dancing. And G.I. Joe, I think G.I. Joe did well.
Oh, yeah, he was in G.I. Joe. I like that movie.
But it had nothing
You're
to do with
You're ruining my Channing Tatum face.
I've just brought some love to the Channing Tatum wheelhouse for Andrew Robinson. anyways, it's an okay movie. It's a very typical sort of it's a mix between a gladiator film and like Braveheart because they're going into the Highlands in Scotland looking for this thing. What's interesting about it is of course they Romans have invaded Britain. And they've enslaved some Brits. And then when he goes over the wall and he goes up north, there's, of course, all the British tribes that he has to fight. And, of course, there's a bit of a problem with him and the slave because the slave's in his native land. And you know, are they going to be loyal to each other? And then they get up there. And it's almost, since they go way in the Highlands and they go to these ancient tribes, they're dealing with these ancient tribes, it kind of has this parallel to, and it's very obvious what they're trying to do, the parallel to the American Indians with the invading Europeans coming into, the U.S. So I think they kind of play that a little bit too heavy-handed at times. But I mean, if for a Sword and Sandal movie, it was okay. It worked. I'm going to give it a kind of rocks.
Question. Did you see Centurion last year?
No, I did not.
Oh, I saw that movie and it was a complete waste. I was going to see if you could compare the two movies and see what you come up with.
You know, if I were to compare this to a movie, the closest I would say would be Pathfinder. Did you see that with Carl Urban a couple years ago?
No, I did not catch Pathfinder.
Kind of reminded me of that. There was Vikings in that one, but same kind of deal. But anyways, let's move on to the next one. Romeo and Juliet has Elton John spearheading this 3D CGI flick that tells the story of Romeo and Juliet with lawn gnomes and less death.
Red gnomes and blue gnomes have been enemies forever.
Oh! On your mark! Get set! Go!
Romeo!
Juliet, I just wanted to see you again.
I'm gonna need you to cover. If my dad asks, just tell him I'm washing my hair.
Take care! I tell your dad you're doing your hair!
Mess with our garden, will you?
Are you at all interested in seeing this?
No. I'm sorry. I have cousins of the age which I should take to watch this movie, but no. I can I can put on more of my Pixar DVDs for them. Yeah. I've seen proper Romeo and Juliet movies. I can even show them my favorite version of Romeo and Juliet, which is West Side Story.
Oh, okay. I personally my favorite Romeo and Juliet version is the Baz Luhrmann version about 15 years ago. I thought it was really good.
I keep wanting to revisit that film because I feel that I hate that movie just because when it came out I was like 12 or something and I had to hate Leonardo DiCaprio because all of the women were fawning over him for no reason other than, oh, he's a child and he's cute.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I should go back and watch that movie to see if it's actually good.
Do you like Baz Luhrmann's stuff though?
I even loved his last movie that everybody hated him for, Australia.
Australia wasn't bad. My big beef with Australia is it was kind of two home. It was like he had a sequel, and he's like, well, they'll never let me make the sequel, so I'm just going to put it at the end.
No, and I saw that, but I still liked it. It still worked for me. And I love Moulin Rouge.
Well, Moulin Rouge is awesome. I saw all his movies in reverse. First one I saw was Australia, then I saw Moulin Rouge, then Romeo and Juliet, then Strictly Ballroom.
I need to check out Strictly Ballroom.
It's a cute movie.
I think I have a DVD copy on my shelf that I haven't checked out yet.
Check it out, especially if you're a fan, because it's very restrained for him because he didn't have a huge budget. So it still has this pop, you know, sort of energy to it, but in a much more sort of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert sort of low budget way.
I'm sure my girlfriend will make me watch it soon.
But anyways, Romeo and Juliet is cute. It's a CGI film. It's in 3D. I took my kids. They enjoyed it. I just couldn't get past the fact that it seems like the entire existence of the film is predicated on a bad pun. It's like, it's not like they said, let's tell this cute little story of this love story between these lawn gnomes, blah, blah, blah. And they had this whole thing and they go, let's call it Romeo and Juliet. No, it's like they said, Romeo and Juliet. And that's where it began. And sort of basing it all on that just seems really crass and trite in my opinion. It works to a degree, but I don't know. It's kind of like if you saw the movie Ants, the DreamWorks movie Ants, about 15, 20 years ago. That one was just nonstop bad, not even good puns, but not even a really pun, just jokes about ants. You're the ant instead of you're the man kind of thing. And
wasn't Woody Allen in that movie?
Yeah, he was. He was the lead.
Wow.
Which that blew my mind. But yeah, so Romeo and Juliet, it's okay. I mean, it's okay for the kids. This is one that's right on the cusp. What's funny is it was originally slated to be done by Disney. When John Lasseter came in, he killed it.
Good boy.
Which you can tell. You can look at this and you'd be like, I can see why John Lasseter killed it. Because it was predicated on a pun. You know, it was
And then they went and made Tangled, one of the best animated movies from last year.
Tangled was very good. John Lasseter knows his stuff. I'll tell you that. But what happened is then they took it to like Stars and they took it and Elton John was behind. I mean, he's like not just the music, he produces it. And then Disney ended up distributing it, which is this weird roundabout way of them not making the movie and then distributing it. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, good business is good business.
Yeah. It's not Tangled. I mean, and Tangled was successful, but it wasn't Toy Story 3 successful.
No, but I mean, Disney no longer has to burden themselves with production costs. They're just distributing and picking up the check afterwards.
Yeah. Well, so except for business. Tangled, which cost $260 million. Which, oh well. I mean, it was a good movie. So anyways, I don't know. Romeo and Juliet, I'm going to kind of say kind of rocks, but like just barely. So the next one is Just Go With It. Adam Sandler pretends to be divorced from Jennifer Aniston in order to get in the pants of Brooklyn Decker.
This may sound strange, but for years I've pretended to be married.
My wife beats me in front of my kids.
No!
I know how wrong it is, but there's no strings attached and nobody gets hurt.
Oh! Just tell her the truth.
Well, let me practice. You be her.
Oh, good. Okay, hold on.
Anyways, I wear this fake wedding ring.
You're a pig.
Just
tell her you're getting a divorce.
I have to tweet to all my friends. Oh gosh, I forgot. You're 15. Ow!
I did not see this yet. They haven't screened. They are screening it. They were just screening it late. So I can't actually give a full review. Are you at all interested in this?
This movie actually came out today here, and I could have gone and watched it since you told me early, but after watching No Strings Attached yesterday, I couldn't put myself through a Jennifer Aniston movie because they're all the same.
Do you like Jennifer Aniston?
No. All right, there may be like two or three movies that I've seen her in which the movie itself surpasses her level of mediocrity.
Like Leprechaun.
You know? And I think of movies like Bruce Almighty.
But nobody saw that for her. That's the thing. She's in these huge movies, these big name movies, but it does well in spite of her. Bruce Almighty, Office Space, no one saw it for her.
No, but I mean, it's kind of like how I felt about The Fighter last year. Mark Wahlberg was Mark Wahlberg, but he isn't the one who made the movie. It was everyone around him who made the movie spectacular. Mark Wahlberg was so run of the mill, and that's probably those movies with Jennifer Aniston, and I'm sure this movie doesn't have enough to bring it up.
She can't act her way out of a paper bag. I mean, she's mildly attractive, but I mean, she was like, yeah, when she was 20, she was hot, but not now.
I actually didn't see it then, so no.
I'm not a big Jennifer Aniston fan. Anyways, we're just going to withhold the review on that one. I don't really care about this one, but we got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
22 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment. Andrew was asking where he could swear.
Can I just start out with...
get it out of your system. Say
fuck
something
shit,
bad.
Cock
say something
ass,
about-
motherfucker, piece of bull. That felt good.
Wow. Was that all? I was going to say, lay out on Channing Tatum if you want.
Just add Channing Tatum to the end. I was trying to remember the line from South Park movie where, at the end, where Cartman ends with Barbara Streisand, but I couldn't remember the sequence.
Well, good. Now that we know we were definitely in the internet only segment. Thank you, Andrew. Was there anything you wanted to, did you want to add anything about Just Go With It, Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston?
You see, the thing is, Adam Sandler, I think, is one of those actors which, and actors, producers, writers, comedians, because he is one of those entire people, and it's obvious from his career that he's one of those hardworking people that, yeah. He will...
I do not disparage his work ethic one bit.
I mean, I remember when they were making Anger Management with Jack Nicholson, and Jack had nothing but praise to say about him. And if Jack has that to say about him, it's something special. And he's crazy, but at the same time, he's a 50-50 guy, because he will do the passion project film, like Anger Management and other films, which we'll mention later. And then
passion project?
I always imagine it as a passion project. I don't know why.
I would think like Rain Over Me was a passion project and sucked.
I actually kind of enjoyed Rain Over Me the first time I saw it. But I feel like I should go back and watch it again. You know, one of those, like, I made a mistake. Because I will admit freely on here, and you can find me on gmanreviews.com. I'm on Twitter at gmanreviews. You can send me all the hate. I enjoyed Crash when I first saw it, and I think it was because not only was I not into the whole film thing at the point, but I watched it without any pretext.
Yeah.
I literally opened the newspaper and said, oh, Crash is on. I don't know that movie. I'll go and watch it for no reason, because I have nothing to do today. And I kind of enjoyed it that day. And
wow. See, I saw Crash knowing nothing about it as well. And I hated it like 2 minutes into the movie. I was like, I hate this movie.
No, I mean, I know I've developed tastes since then, and I've revisited the film, and I've had to apologize.
It did win the Oscar,
so
I mean, there are people who liked it, you know.
But yeah, and that's how I feel. Like Adam Sandler, he does the films where he wants to hang out with his friends, like grown-ups, and then he does really good films other times.
Yeah, what's funny is I do a bunch of weekly radio calls, but there's one station in town I go. I personally go in, and every now and then I run into a comedian because they're promoting. They're in town for the weekend doing a show at the Funny Bone, and so I run into comedians all the time. I ran into Brian Posehn. I've run into Harlan Williams. What's funny, I ran into Harlan Williams. You know who Harlan Williams is, don't you?
Not a clue.
Did you ever see Something About Mary?
Yes, I did.
He was the hitchhiker who killed people, you know.
Like
7 6-minute abs, six. Six little chipmunks, seven little chipmunks sitting on a branch, you know, that whole thing.
Okay.
And Harlan was this wacky, schmackety guy. He wanted to talk about nothing but The Dark Knight, because Neil and I were in the studio and he asked, he's like, well, what was The Dark Knight like? You know, because we had seen it already. But, and I forget what comedian it was, but I ran in and it was talking, and I think it was right after Funny People, which we'll talk a little bit about this later. I hated Funny People. Or I didn't like Funny People when I first saw it. I hate it when I saw it on DVD a second time. And I kind of was bad-mouthing it. And man, he was just like, it wasn't like he was defending Adam Sandler's films. He was defending Adam Sandler as a person. Because apparently, Sandler's like the nicest guy.
He seems like he would be the nicest guy ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like he is so grateful and helpful and nice to people, and he doesn't have an ego on his shoulders. It's just he makes shit sometimes.
He does. Like, I imagine him as one of those people who, like, 3 months after the movie has come out and it's done its bid, he can actually go and say to people out loud, you know, that movie really was bad.
Probably. Anyways, let's move on. Real quick, I want to talk about the Oscar shorts. This is another thing I'm going to quickly review. Didn't have in the regular segment, but right now, this week, there are places that are playing the Oscar shorts, the five nominated Best animated film, best live action short film, and best documentary short films. In Columbus, they have they're doing blocks of those. You can also, starting next week, get them on iTunes. And these are really great. I love short films because, you know, if they're awesome, they're awesome. And if they suck, you don't have to sit. You don't have to waste 90 minutes of your day. But the animated films, Day and Night is great. The Gruffalo is lesser known. Everyone saw Day and Night because it was in front of Toy Story. But The Gruffalo is really cool. And there's this really bizarre, out-of-the-box one called The Lost Thing. And then live-action shorts. You've got this one great one called God of Love. And then, like, everything else is about British school children. Except for one called Na'vi, I think is what it is. It's about, it takes place in Africa. And it's in a, it's a French-speaking region of Africa. And it's about people being stopped at a roadside. And they're, you know, splitting people up for ethnic cleansing. It's a pretty chilling look at that. So, you know, just if you get a chance, check those out either at your local theater or on iTunes next week. Next up, box office.
Yeah,
last week was a terrible weekend for movies. You had The Roommate at $15 million. This is, of course, US. I don't know how it did in Jamaica.
They don't publish numbers. They don't want me to know.
They don't want anyone to know. They're like, we made $70 this week with The Right or something like that. The Roommate one was $15 million, and second was Sanctum with $9.5 million. And what I think is interesting about Sanctum is people are like, is this the... Because I know you and I have had 3D discussions.
Yes, we have.
In the past. A lot of news stories, a lot of people saying, oh, 3D's going away. People are getting tired of 3D because the box office isn't quite there. I think it's not that people are running away from 3D. I think people are running away from a 50% ticket hike.
I don't know. Like, I know a lot of people who, more than the ticket price, they complain about the fact that they have to wear glasses in the theater.
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, because I think if it was like a $1 or $2 hike, how much more are prices in Jamaica?
It's $4, $4.5, like around $4 more.
Okay,
than the about that regular price.
What's a normal price, like $9 to see a movie?
It's, I have to do this math in my head so quickly. It's around $9, I think.
Okay, so that's about what they are here in the States, and a $4 or $5 ticket price is, and it's kind of like when I went and saw Piranha 3D, it was one of those movies that I thought, I'm like, it's one of those, as a, now I had to go see it because I was reviewing it and I had to pay, but as a consumer I'd be like, well, I'd spend $9, I could spend put a $10 bill into the ticket office and get change and be satisfied with that. Putting a $15, having to put $15 into the ticket office seemed a little steep to see Piranha. I think that that's actually driving, keeping more people away and waiting for video for the smaller movies like Piranha. I think the Green Hornet has taken a hit because of that, because there's a lot of people who are like, I'll just wait till Blu-ray, as opposed to spending the regular price. And I think that that hurt Sanctum.
I don't know. You know, I think what hurt Sanctum, in all honesty, is James Cameron. His name was just saturated on that thing, and people knew it wasn't his film. People knew it wasn't Avatar. People knew it was just some random 3D project, which felt like, honestly, it looked like it was an underwater documentary. Like, it doesn't have a story. It's just like, we're going underwater, and it's in 3D.
Well, and I mean, but that's fair, because the last movie obviously was Avatar, but before that, the last two or three movies that Cameron did were underwater 3D documentaries. He did Ghosts of the Abyss. He did Aliens of the Deep, which were all these IMAX 50-minute movies. So I think that's a fair that's very fair. I think it's a very fair criticism. What's interesting to note is the last time only one movie made less than $10 million, or only one movie made more than $10 million, was, I believe, when Resident Evil came out.
The last October, Resident Evil?
The last Resident Evil, but that made like $26 million. So it actually had a pretty, and it was the only new one opening, I think, had a pretty solid number. Before that, the weakest weekend was I believe when Bangkok Dangerous came out in the theaters like two Septembers ago, and nothing made over $10 million.
Nick Cage, he knows how to kill a box office.
He does. He does. The longer his hair, the worse the movie. So what do you think is going to win this weekend?
This weekend, looking ahead, I think Bieber might take it.
Really? You do think you think the Beeb's going to do it?
I think all the girls are going to do it. Like, I don't think Sandler's going to win it. I think it's going to be close, but I think Bieber will win it over Sandler.
Really? I am going to put my money behind, God help me, Adam Sandler. Just go with it. Because I don't think Bieber's going to do that well. I think Bieber's good for like 12 million. 15 million tops. I mean, and that's with the 3D. And some of those prices, they jack it up even more for like those concert films sometimes. They'll jack it up like to almost 20 bucks. But if you looked at the Hannah Montana concert, was a surprise hit. And then the next one they did was the Jonas Brothers. And that one was kind of a flop. It did not make nearly as much money as they expected. And then, of course, This Is It. I don't know if This Is It was a... is comparable, since I think, let's just say, I think Michael Jackson, not just in the rapey sort of way, I think Michael Jackson had more penetration into his audience.
This Is It grossed 72 million. Opening weekend was 23.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't in 3D.
I can't, well, so is Justin Bieber, but I think Justin Bieber has such a small market share. I mean, they're rabid, you know, it's like, but it's not even like Twilight, where Twilight has the 13-year-old girl segment, but it has all the female segment, you know, going up to the Twimons. I think that you just have that 13-year-old girl segment, for Justin Bieber, which is exactly what you had for, the Jonas Brothers.
We shall see, sir.
We shall see. I'll tell you what, I will do a push-up. I will do 10 push-ups on the air if Justin Bieber wins.
10 push-ups for every million it beats.
I don't want to die of a heart attack. Well, I mean, I could have this sudden, you know, just go with it could come in like $220 million less, and for some strange aberrant reason, I'd be dead on the floor doing 200 push-ups.
All right.
You'll get 10 push-ups. And I'll do real push-ups, unlike that faker Fozzie Bear who just didn't really do the push-ups and just grunted on the phone. speaking of grunting on the phone, we have a voicemail to play. This is our friend Thomas from Seattle giving us another question of the week. Here it is.
Hey, Kevin and Neil, it's Thomas from Seattle. And hey, but I was just wondering, you know, you talk to people sometimes, and this is about spoilers, and they say, like, if something is in the trailer, then it's not a spoiler. But at the same time, there's also the phenomenon of trailers that seem like they give the whole movie away. So I was just wondering, is something not a spoiler just because it's in the trailer? Because I think that still probably can be a spoiler. Anyway, I wanted to just hear what you and Neil thought about that, and I guess I'll talk to y'all soon. And again, I forgot to say last week, again, congratulations on the 200th episode. I think I came in around episode 100, and I just really enjoyed the last, you know, the 100 or so that I've listened to. You know, it's a great thing. I live far from work. So, I just pop it in when I'm going, and it's like it's made traffic in Seattle a whole lot better. Okay, bye, guys. Talk to y'all next week.
So there you go. What do you think of spoilers and trailers? When do they go too far? What's your thoughts, Andrew Robinson?
I do think that spoilers are in trailers. I think they're in every trailer today. And truth of it is, I think it's tough for someone to cut a trailer and sell me a movie without spoiling it. Because I've seen trailers from like the 90s where they literally give you the first two acts and leave you in the dark. And it makes the movie more surprising to you. But at the same time, it makes it a little less appealing to you. Don't know where it's going to go. You're kind of lost. And I think most of the spoilers are for people like us who watch so many movies that we can see that, yup, that's 1, 2, and 3, and that's how it's going to go. There are very few trailers that don't do that. I think the only way you're going to avoid it is, you know, just watch the teaser trailers and stop there.
Yeah. I mean, are you like me? Because I'll watch, if I've seen a trailer, especially two or three times, I have a really good memory for the visuals. And I'll watch a movie and I'll be like, well, I haven't done, oh, there's that shot. And I'm like, there's like still three or four cool shots from the trailer that haven't shown up. I mean, do you do that? Do you sit there? Do you just unconsciously do an accounting of what was already shown in the trailer?
I've done that at times, but not a lot. Like, it happens to me with movies and trailers that I've seen repeatedly. Like, for example, with Watchmen, I literally had that trailer on a loop for around a week when it first came out. So I was I was going through it. And I guess that also helped the fact that I had read the book like a dozen times.
Well, yeah, I mean, they took the storyboards right out of the book. So
yeah, so, I mean, yeah. There are trailers for films like that. Like, The Social Network also, that was a trailer which I had on loop for a week because it was just so hypnotic to me. And I was just going, like, scene to scene. I'm like, I haven't seen him type on that keyboard yet. And it came up and stuff like that.
When do you think a trailer should – when do you think they should restrict? If you were, like, the producer, you'd be like, cut this trailer, but you can't use anything from the 30-minute mark on or what? How would you do that? How would you –
I say the thing for it to do is the same thing that we strive to do when we write reviews for films. Uh-huh. It's, you can say whatever you want as long as you don't put it in context. You take it out of the context of the film. So even though someone is reading something and they don't know it's a spoiler, so they go into the film and they still are surprised by it. Like I remember...
Go and give me your example.
Like I remember Inception. I remember I was struggling to write that review for so many weeks, and then it came upon me that no matter what I mention in this review, it won't spoil the film, because unless I literally take 2,000 words and write a complete plot synopsis, you're not going to get anything I'm telling you about. If I talk about how badass Mao is, you're going to be like, who's Mao? Why is she badass? Yeah. Like, that makes no sense to me. You can always take things out of context and make it different when it comes to the trailer as opposed to the film.
What about something like Piranha? Did you see Piranha?
I did see Piranha.
There is literally the final shot of the film is in the trailer.
Yeah, but the thing is, it takes it out of context, so you don't know what that really means. When you see the trailer, you're just like, oh, that looks like an awesome shot. And then when you hit around that 85th minute mark, you're like, wait, that's supposed to happen, and then it happens. And I guess it gives you a little cushion for that enjoyment, but it's nothing huge.
Yeah. See, for me personally, I didn't like the fact. I mean, it was a cool shot, but that's why they used it. But I thought that they really went over the line with Piranha. Or other ones like Predators, it pissed me off that there was a shot in the trailer that's not actually in the film that gives the impression that there's hundreds of predators on the planet, and there's like five. Do you know the shot I'm talking
about? Yeah, I know what you're talking about. When you see the lights come on Adrian Brody and they're like 5,000 of them, and in the movie it's really just like two predators or something.
Yeah.
But that's another whole story for when they purposely mislead you. And also when they re-edit films and then shots that are in the trailer aren't in the film, which kind of annoys me sometimes because, I mean...
That'll annoy me, but I understand the filmmaking process to the point that, well, they cut that trailer and that was in there at the time. The cut that guy, the editor who made that trailer was delivered a rough cut that had that shot in it. So I'm like that to me, I look at more of the casualty of the process as opposed to just blatantly spoiling a film.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's something that it's going to be there and you're going to have to put up with it. So you're going to have to decide whether you're going to watch the trailers or not. And it's, I mean, I guess it's not much of a decision because if you go to the theater, you're going to be seeing them anyways.
Yeah. Well, one that I thought was interesting is Anger Management. You had mentioned before as an Adam Sandler film, but if you watch the trailer of the movie, it sets it up. But it is kind of a bit of a complex setup to get the full setup. But the problem with that movie is when I saw it for the first 30-40 minutes, I was bored out of my mind because I was just like, okay. They summarized it so well that it was everything else was extraneous, and you realized you could have just played the 2 minute trailer and started it at like minute 40 and you'd be okay.
I mean, so not everyone is going to want their trailer to look like the trailer for that new Terrence Malick film coming out this year, The Tree of Life, where it tells you absolutely nothing, and you're just going to be like, it's Terrence Malick, I didn't need to see a trailer. Or you're going to be like, yeah, it's Terrence Malick, I don't want to watch the movie.
I've yet to watch that. I can't bring myself, because there's so many polarizing of people, like, it's so beautiful, and some people, it's so pretentious, you know. So I'm just like, I'm almost like not wanting to watch the trailer of that one.
The trailer was cut for people who love pretentious cinema and go. Unfortunately, I happen to be that group of individuals. So
you do love your pretentious cinema.
I do love my pretentious cinema, but at the same time, I love my rubbish movies, like, I don't know, Piranha.
Transformers 2.
Piranha has its place in my heart where I laugh at it, and it laughs back.
It does laugh back at you. Anyways, okay, so I guess that's our thoughts on Tom. My, personally, I think that they should, if you can't blurb the movie, they shouldn't give anything away past Act 1. Because even there's stuff in, I mean, as long, like, well, there's a movie, I just saw I Am Number 4. Which I can't really review, but in the trailer, there's a scene where they're like, who are you? I am number 6. You don't get that until like literally the last 15 minutes of the movie. And you're like, who is this person? Who's, oh, yeah, I know that because I watched the trailer. I know exactly who that person is. So it'd be like doing a, you know, Star Wars, doing Empire Strikes Back. It'd be like, start off with him going, I am your father. And be like, thank you.
So. Talking about movies and spoilers, one thing I really kind of find funny is how certain aspects of old films have reached into movies nowadays to the point where people just know it. Like, for example, the whole Star Wars and the I'm Your Father thing. Like, that's no longer a spoiler. I find that funny.
Well, it's just kind of like, Citizen Kane. Look, if you haven't seen Citizen Kane yet, like, if you don't know that Rosebud's a sled and you don't know that Norman Bates is his mother, or that Darth Vader is Luke's father, you're not watching movies. You're not going to watch them.
Actually, the funny part is when I saw Citizen Kane, I didn't know Rosebud was a sled, and that annoyed me to tears when I found out I was at the end.
You're like, oh, you pissed off. You're like, that's a shitty ending. Screw that. What the hell does he know about filmmaking?
I think my favorite one is The Third Man, even though that's not much ingrained in stuff, but it's kind of really easily given away, because anyone watches The Third Man, it's because they heard Orson Welles is in it, and the third act, it's Orson Welles' character, who was the guy who happens to really be alive that everyone thought was dead.
I've never seen The Third Man, so
no, literally, you're going to put on the movie, you're going to be like, where is Orson Welles? And you hear them talking about a character who is dead. And then you're going to be like, I'm sure that's Orson Welles. And in the third act,
he
appears.
That happens a lot in movies where they're like starring so-and-so, and then you're like, he doesn't show up until the end of the movie. Yeah, I've seen that, where they'll put somebody's name in, or they'll put him in the trailer. And again, yeah, they're in the trailer because they don't show up until the very end. All right, well, let's move on. We talked about that enough. Let's do the Fat Guy 5 really quick and then get out of here. So these are in honor of Just Go With It, which neither of us have seen, so we can't really trash.
I can.
But these, because you have no shame.
None.
even though you could have gone and seen it. these are five five Adam Sandler movies that are actually entertaining. I'm going to start the list. The first one is Billy Madison. It was a choice between Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, because that's what he named his company after, and that's what he's really kind of launched out of Saturday Night Live. I just thought Billy Madison was hilarious because it's old school Adam Sandler. It's Adam Sandler playing the dick and just being stupid. And it has some just off-the-wall, bizarre character. Steve Buscemi's cameo in it is brilliant. Yeah, Billy Madison.
Keeps dreaming about a penguin. It's a penguin, right?
Yeah, I think that is. It is a penguin, isn't it? So you've got the next one.
It's really amazing film, and I don't know if you'd call it entertaining, but I love it. I laugh every time I watch it. It's Paul Thomas Anderson's Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah.
And for some reason, deep down inside, I imagine you would hate this film as the murderer of love, but It's one of my favorite movies of Adam Sandler because it's so different from everything else you've ever seen him do. And from scenes in the beginning where you watch him slamming a plunger against a sink. And eating
pudding.
And you see him playing around with this little broken piano thing. It's a great movie, and I love the music to it. It's just so... I use this word too often, but it fits it perfectly. It's hypnotic, because as soon as you press play, it has a certain momentum to it that you just don't want to stop.
Well, it's short. It's like 90 minutes, too.
Yeah.
I mean, for a P.T. Anderson movie, that's pretty short. One of the things I think is interesting about Punch Drunk Love is I believe, I may not be 100% correct on this, but I believe it is either the first or one of the first. I think it was the first movie that he did that was not in that screwball comedy genre. It was him actually giving a chance to act.
Probably.
And it turned some heads. And then he did other crap like Spanglish and Rain Over Me. But yeah, that was his first. That was a proving point that he could actually do dramatic acting, which I think he can. I think he's a great actor.
He is.
Doesn't always pick the best projects. Speaking of great projects, let's talk about Bulletproof. Did you see Bulletproof?
I think I have missed this one. I've missed out on this one. Tell me why Bulletproof is in this list.
It just for no other reason than it's old school Adam Sandler. It is a buddy cop movie with Adam Sandler and Damon Wayans. And there's just basically the, but I don't even think, you know, honestly, I can't even remember the full plot. I just thought it was really funny. I know one of them's a cop. I think Damon Wayne's a cop and Adam Sandler is a criminal, but they're kind of stuck together, sort of like a 48 hours kind of thing. And it's funny. It's like I said, old school Adam Sandler. No one really remembers this because even though it's old school Adam Sandler, it's that cop genre movie that he's not known for. He's known for Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, but not this. So I got to throw some love in for Bulletproof.
I'm going to... You just went all the way back to old school Sandler. I'm going to bring up the new stuff. I'm going to bring up You Don't Mess With the Zohan. And this movie is so bad. It is so horrible. It is one of the worst movies you could ever review for anybody. But the truth of the matter is it's so downright silly all the time that I love it. It's just like all the stupid Sandler from way back when. Now he's a Muslim and he's in war and he's a badass. And what's that guy's name?
He's not Muslim. He's Jewish. Jewish. He's Israeli.
Israeli. Sorry.
There's a slight difference.
I don't.
From a geopolitical standpoint, there's a slight difference.
You can find me at GManReviews on Twitter. And get this stuff going.
Wow.
And John Turturro is there, and it's so hilarious and stupid, and he puts a lot of things in his ass, apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That constitutes a good movie. Funny, hilarious, and people stupid. Putting things in their ass.
It talks about bushes, and it's hilarious.
And it has Emmanuel Shrieky in it, and she's gorgeous. So.
Oh, is that her name? Didn't know her name.
The girl who works at the beauty parlor.
Yeah, I assume that's who you're talking about.
Yeah.
She is quite hot.
Yes. I have to say, I thought Zohan was going to be the worst movie of that summer, and it wasn't. I thought it wasn't great. I didn't think it was awesome, but I thought it was pretty funny.
It's an awesome bad movie. Yes. As my friends have explained it to me, the scale is not a line, it is a circle. You go all the way to bad, and if you're good enough, you can break the barrier and become awesome again.
That's true. You can. like The Room. Then this is the last one on the list, is 51st Dates. And I have to say, I do kind of like the sweet Adam Sandler comedies because he's very self-deprecating. I have an interesting story about 51st Dates. I really enjoyed it. A neat little romantic comedy. I took my wife. She owns it on DVD. And I think, you know, a lot of people point to The Wedding Singer. And The Wedding Singer is not bad. But this one, I think, really clicks better. I used to write for a online publication, which will go nameless. And you'll see why. But I wrote a review for 51st Dates, and I liked it. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was cute. It was great, you know, date movie kind of material. And let's just say that the readership of this online publication didn't appreciate my point of view because they had a little more of that indie cred kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of was sort of fired over liking this movie. Not fired, but it was kind of like, it's like, hey, look, if you're going to write this kind of, you can't just, love. It was this and Bringing Down the House, the Steve Martin movie. I like both of those, and people are like, what? You're supposed to be like, you're supposed to be hating on this mainstream crap. And I'm kind of like, I liked it. And so it was sort of like this, well, you may not want to write too many more reviews for us, kind of thing. So, you know, that kind of stuff happens.
I guess it does.
Did I just bring you down? So you're like, oh, that's too bad, man.
Actually, I kind of like 50 First Dates. It's a fun little movie. Even and I like how it doesn't go down the, what's that, Love and Other Drugs route of becoming completely serious about the trouble that it's having, the medical trouble. But
yeah,
I like it. It's sweet. It's okay. I would thumbs up your 4 out of 5 review.
Ah, you would have thumbs up my 4 out of 5. I thought you were talking about putting things in people's butts again.
No, like no,
you're,
no.
You're talking about your thumb.
Going, do not hit me at Gman Reviews for that comment.
Anyways, you also wanted to give a little honorable mention to another movie.
To the one you refused, Funny People. It was one of my top 10 films of 2009. I happen to enjoy a lot of films which deal with the idea of celebrity. The idea of people who we...
Well, that's been nothing but Adam Sandler for the last 2 years.
We put people on this pedestal and we look at them as gods, but they're really not. They're really real people. And the idea of this story about this guy who's trying to figure out how to be a real person again. And the thing that makes him do it is the fact that he gets cancer. I mean, yeah, it does do a weird thing where it goes, I have cancer, I don't, and he becomes an asshole again and all sorts of stuff. But it really plays up that celebrity aspect and a commentary on celebrity, which I really enjoy. And I find it a funny movie. It's really dramatic for people like Adam Sandler, but seeing like Schwartzman, Hill, and Rogan, whenever they're together on screen, they're hilarious.
Yeah.
And it also introduced me to Aubrey Plaza, who... She needs to do stand-up.
She's delicious.
I loved her in Scott Pilgrim as well.
Yeah. And she's in, Parks and Rec or something like that?
I don't watch Parks and Rec. I tried to watch it when it just started, but I got disinterested and I haven't gone back.
Here's the thing. When I saw Funny People in theater, I enjoyed it. I thought it was decent. Not without its flaws, but I was like, eh. And then I saw it again on Blu-ray. And I hated every minute of it. And I think the reason I hated it, for a couple reasons, there's three main reasons, and it all goes to Judd Apatow's ego, because I did not like the fact that there were times when it just was like Judd Apatow saying, look at all the people I know. We're going to have this scene with Ray Romano and Eminem and this guy. And remember this guy from this show? He's in it too. I know these people. They're my friends. I'm awesome. So on a certain level, it is revealing the just sort of like the average person life of a celebrity, but it also is falling into its own traps at that. Plus, and then on top of it, I think Leslie Mann is cute, but I don't need Judd Apatow scene. Look how hot my wife is. There's a whole sequence where he's like talking about how hot his wife is.
Actually, I'm not a huge fan of Leslie Mann, and I think it's kind of funny that Judd Apatow feels the need to cast his whole family in every film he does.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. The kids, I mean, I love my kids. I'd put them in a movie, but the memory scene where she's singing, the girl singing Memory from Cats, I'm like, okay, at this point, you're just being gratuitous.
Like when the trailer first came out and someone told me that it was his children and I looked back at Knocked Up and it's his children, I started to make jokes about how it's a recession, but I don't know what I can say at this point.
I would love to see Judd Apatow and Will Smith co-produce a movie, see how much screen time each of their kids get. It'd be nothing but that.
Could you imagine Jaden and the older sister and then Willow and the younger girl, Judd Apatow child, fighting in that movie? It'd be a tournament film.
In a house fight, yes. Anyways, I with that, I think we can go to break. And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We have talked about way more than we probably should have. Talked about spoilers and trailers if you want to go back and listen to the internet-only segment. It's got some interesting stuff in there, including our wild box office predictions and my...
Why have you left me again?
What?
Why have you left me again?
What do you mean I left you?
You were blank for like a moment there.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's okay. No one will notice at home. Again, recording problems. That's okay. That's because we're doing an international broadcast this week. But now... it's time for the, well, you got to say this because we do this every year. You got to say every week, you got to say world famous DVD roundup and I get to do the awesome sound effects. So you can introduce it. Yeah.
I guess this is the world famous DVD roundup.
This is important stuff. You got to have that sound effect in
some, for a long time. I thought like you had recorded that from episode one and you just kept inserting it, but no, I feel special.
Oh no, no, no. It's my voice. It's like the guy from those Police Academy movies. It's like the black guy from Police Academy who can make all the noise. That's me.
So they had a backup when... So why didn't you get the call when they were making Police Academy?
I don't know. I blame racism. What are your DVD picks for the week, Andrew?
I gotta say, it's a really skimpy week, but if you gotta go to the DVD store and pick up something, I say get Uncle Buck. It came out on Blu-ray this week. It's a great movie. It's one of those unsung films of John Hughes.
It's not the first one. Everyone goes Breakfast Club, 16 Candles. You know, you'll maybe think of Uncle Buck before you think of Curly Sue.
And I know there's a film of John Hughes that I love even more than this, which is even less sung. But it's not out on DVD this week, so I guess I shouldn't mention it.
Well, what is it? Tell me. I'm just curious.
She's Having a Baby.
Oh, isn't that with Elizabeth Montgomery or McGovern?
And Kevin Bacon.
And Kevin Bacon, yeah, that's a great movie.
Yeah, people don't talk about that movie for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, we just did, so. what else do you have? You're right, there's not a whole lot of great stuff out there, but there's a whole bunch of stuff releasing this week.
Another movie, which I guess is more of a rental, but if you're a huge fan, you're going to buy it. Because I can't see myself watching this movie too much, but I did love it when I saw it in the theater. It's Paranormal Activity 2.
Okay.
I was a non-believer of this franchise when it was first started, and then someone made me go and watch the second one in the theater, so I watched the first one before, and the second one was just so creepy, watching it in the theater. So I don't know how much it'll work for you on a home viewing level, so yeah. I say rent it.
And there was an intermission, I'm sure, when you saw
it. Yeah, there was, which totally sucked.
Wow. What's your last recommendation?
My last recommendation is nothing. I don't want to recommend the last film. I want to tell people not to watch it.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Yeah, well, we'll put that in the stinker category.
Yeah.
Then. Let me just go off a couple of them. I mean, I'm not even going to, just to note, I Spit on Your Grave remake is out. I've not seen the remake. I've seen the original. I've no desire to see the remake. But, you know, hey, some people like that sort of thing. So that's out there. But there's also probably my favorite one this week is Repo Chick, which is the low budget non-sequel to Repo Man with Emilio Estevez from the 80s. But of course, none of the characters are the same. It's another sort of story of repossession and weird stuff happening.
Yeah.
It's neat. I mean, it's low budget and it's goofy and it's weird. It's not a particularly well acted film, but it's fun and it kept my interest. So check that out. My Soul to Take, which isn't that good, but it's Wes Craven trying to recapture the teen slasher genre, and it's better than the stinkers. We'll get to You Again and Life as We Know It. These are two sort of rom-coms you can check out just in time for Valentine's Day if you're going to do a double feature, a triple feature with I Spit on Your Grave. There's America, America from Warner Brothers and Wild Target from Fox, which the Wild Target is the one with Bill Nighy and Emily Blunt and Rupert Grint.
I've heard that movie's good.
I haven't gotten it yet. I requested it, but I haven't seen it, so I do want to check it out. Stinker, my pick was Four Colored Girls because it's just this weepy, overly melodramatic mess of a movie by Tyler Perry. I kept wanting Madea to show up. She didn't.
I mean, I've mentioned my piece on Four Colored Girls, and you can go read that on G-Man Reviews, but my stinker of the week, I guess it's kind of harsh to call it a stinker because you're basically equating it to Four Colored Girls, but it isn't. It's just unaffecting. It's just the worst kind of movie you can ever watch, and it's kind of a funny story. And I had really high hopes for this movie because the directors and writers, Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden, I love their other films, Half Nelson and Sugar, but this movie, I didn't feel anything. I just felt like I was being forced some story that I was like, oh, okay, they're acting and they're in a crazy shop and I don't care. I'm going to go look at my BlackBerry now.
The best part of that movie, I think, was the dream sequence when they were singing Queen. That I thought was the best part of the movie.
I did love that part.
Okay, well, there are your DVD picks. Let's do the quick review wrap-up. We've got the Justin Bieber film, which gets a preemptive suck. The Eagle, which gets a kind of rocks, and Romeo and Juliet's, which barely gets a kind of rocks. Just Go With It is... well, we didn't see it yet, so I can't say yes or no on that.
I say don't go.
Okay, Andrew says skip it. And then we also have the Oscar shorts, which I say go see. Next week, we're going to be talking about Big Mama, like father and like son. Dear God. I Am Number 4 and Unknown. Thank you. You can catch us, fatguysofthemovies.com. Andrew, in the next 20 seconds, give us what your deal is.
GmanReviews.com, Twitter at GmanReviews, Facebook.com/GmanReviews. Find me there, and hopefully you'll be interested.
Good. Thank you for coming on to the show, Andrew, and I'm sure we'll have you on again.
No problem. It's been a pleasure.